You're listening to the Heroes Podcast Network.
Derek here of Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network. Nominations are open for Best Local Podcast in Kansas City at thepitchkc.com/bestofkc19. Please consider going to the Arts and Entertainment section and voting for Screen Heroes as the Best Local Podcast of Kansas City in 2019. Nominations are open until July 8th, so please get your nomination in as soon as possible. Thank you for your consideration. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Shirts and Runabouts. This is episode 74. I am Derek, and I have my not always co-host, Ray, with me.
Hello.
Hi, Ray.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
You're sounding good. Very handsome.
Oh, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Enough of that. Anyway, so for those who have been following along, we are continuing our Prepping for Picard series, mini-series kind of thing. For those who may not know what that is, my regular co-host, Greg, is busy doing some other away missions.
Life stuff.
Yeah, life stuff. And anyway, so because of that, Ray and I decided to kind of start this little mini-series to fill in some content in an area that's kind of relevant for Star Trek coming up, which is Picard. He is returning, of course, in the new show, supposedly, in 2019. And we put together a list of what I believe to be the top 20 quintessential Picard episodes of TNG.
And you did get Twitter help. So this wasn't exactly just pulled from your brain only. You asked around.
I got a little bit of feedback. Yeah, a couple episodes were added to the list when I wasn't quite at 20. But yeah, so we talked about all those. We talked about why each one made it on the list. And then last time we started going through the episodes and we did Encounter at Farpoint. So check out episode 73 if you missed that one. This week is our second Prepping for Picard episode, which is the season 1 episode 25, Conspiracy. Conspiracy is kind of an interesting episode because it actually, and I had kind of forgotten this over the years, it's basically a sequel to episode 18, which is Coming of Age. So if you decided just to jump into this episode, you might be a little confused as to what is being referenced from a previous event.
As someone who hadn't seen episode 18 and just watched episode 25, I don't think it's that bad.
That's good.
I felt just fine. I got enough backstory through exposition and dialogue that I was fine.
Okay. Well, that's something. Mm-hmm. So that episode, Coming of Age, just real quick, involves Admiral Quinn and Remick coming aboard the Enterprise and essentially saying that there is something or someone infiltrating the Federation and Starfleet, and whether or not Picard and the Enterprise can be trusted. And Remick comes off as a jerk. He is really just doing his job, but he does come off as a total jerk. And by the end of the episode, spoiler alert, he wants to be on the Enterprise and be a crew member because that's how impressed he is with the crew. And so that doesn't happen, obviously, and we find him still with Admiral Quinn here on Earth in this episode. So Conspiracy came out in May of 1988. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the show started in September of 87. So we're, you know, a good ways into it at this point. Season one's just about over. And I guess we can kind of just start from the beginning. So if you don't know the episode, there will be spoilers for this. So let's kind of kick things off. So something we were just talking about before we started is there's no B plot.
It's very unusual for not just Star Trek, but for any show. Modern television from like the 70s to now has had multiple threads running. They have large ensembles, so they split their characters up, give them all something to do. And that didn't happen in this one. Everything was mainly focused on Picard. Riker was obviously second. And then the rest of the crew, they were there. And they they all had a hand in the same storyline.
Yeah, there's really nothing else going on. And that was something I think maybe they did more and more as time went on, having a lot of B plots with like Geordi and Data and mm-hmm. things like that. But yeah, I mean, this is all conspiracy 100%, which is kind of interesting. So the episode kicks off pretty normal. They're going to Pacifica and they have, you know, an event that they're attending there. It's pretty straightforward when a code 47 comes in, which I don't think we ever hear about ever again off the top of my head.
That's too bad because that was very unique. I liked the idea that captains could talk to captains, that there's a covert way to discuss things and without like any logs, records, nothing is being kept. The message is destroyed afterwards. Like, I mean, we don't even have that really with social media. Everything is kept
somewhere.
Somewhere. Yeah. So I thought that was unique and it's too bad that it was dropped because it was interesting.
They come up with random rules for like your eyes only kind of things. Voyager has the Omega Directive. When they find an Omega particle and that becomes a whole thing and all of that. So, yeah, it is kind of a shame. And of course, the code 47 doesn't last very long before Picard just tells his entire bridge staff what's going on, which I think is pretty in tune with Star Trek. Part of me thinks this episode might have been a lot better if it had been maybe in season 3 or 4. Because this is still season 1. There's one more episode left in season 1. And, you know, we still are getting to know our characters. They're still getting to know each other. And with episode 18 being coming of age, being about the crew, and they're very protective of Picard, I always felt like this was a little soon for that. But, you know, anyway, that's what we have. So he gets Picard, that is, gets a message, a communique from an old friend of his, Captain Keel, who he knows from the old days. He, you know, was around for Beverly Crusher's husband to still be alive and those types of things. And he says that they need to meet at another planet at a covert location. And so they go out to Ditalix B. That was what it was. I couldn't remember what it was. Ditalix B. You don't see any of the ships, which is kind of a bummer. I always like that. But...
Well, you kind of see the Horatio later. That's funny because it blows up.
It does, yeah. It implodes, according to Admiral Savar later. But this is where it's not really until Picard beams down the Ditalix B that anything really happens of significance in this episode. He beams down to the planet, and this is where things start to get real. So he's confronted on the planet by Keel and two other captains, and this is where I kind of want to begin focusing on Picard and why this episode was picked. So that scene, from your perspective, how do you think Picard handled what was going on at this point?
Absolutely as best as he could, to be completely honest. I think a more, or more immature, or I guess a lesser of a man would be more actively angered. He was completely diverted off of a mission, one that his whole crew was kind of looking forward to. So that's a little bit of a bummer. And he's kept in the dark about what is going on. So I guess I would just figure that a normal person would be more frustrated and angry with it. And he kept his composure. He went through the interview process that Keel puts him through. And, you know, he has two phasers being pointed at him. And he's still every bit as, I guess, Picard as possible, you know, because there's plenty of different adjectives I could throw in there, but they're all just Picard. He never once changes his mannerisms or his behavior just because he's in a threatening situation.
Yeah, I think this is one of the early examples of how he puts his trust in individuals. He believes in the organization of Starfleet. He believes in what the Federation symbolizes, but he trusts in individuals.
Yeah.
Right? And he is willing to go against orders, go against regulations if he trusts the person, right? Or if it's important enough to him morally, ethically, things of that nature. And you know, we see that in the Insurrection movie, for example. So here, I think you're right. I think he knows Kiel. He respects Kiel, trusts him. They go way back. They were inseparable, right? And he's willing to put his life at risk. He doesn't go down armed. He's totally by himself. He has no weapons. He's completely outnumbered. And he still is he's calm, but he's also not like wishy-washy or tiptoeing around either.
Exactly. He wants people to get to the point.
Right.
Because Picard's the type of guy who doesn't like being confused, you know? He wants to have things straight in his head, and he can get on board with whatever Kiel's doing as soon as he explains it to him.
Now, they have the whole conversation. Picard doesn't quite believe these conspiracy theories. He even calls them conspiracy theories. And, you know, he's confronted with three people he really respects. He doesn't know the other two as well, but he still respects them, says they're the best of Starfleet. You know, the woman, she's the youngest person ever to make captain, you know, which is, I mean, it's a pretty big deal considering how old Starfleet is by this point and some of the people that we've seen. I mean, that means that she made it to captain before Kirk did. Which, you know, he's the one who cheated in the Kobayashi Maru and was supposedly fairly young. So these are good officers.
Yeah.
Good people. And so he wants to believe them, but at the same time, like, he needs some evidence. He needs some empirical evidence, something to build off of rather than suspicions.
It's really coming together how you turned out. Like, why you are the way you are. It absolutely makes sense the more we watch these.
I mean, what would Picard do?
Exactly.
Is the question. I don't always follow the motto, but I want to. So, yeah. You know. So, you know, there's some good quips that Picard gets in there, too. You know, Kiel tells him to watch his back. And he's like, yeah, that's probably something you should always be doing. or I guess she says it. But that was his response. And I think that that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So he leaves, he goes back up to the Enterprise, and they head back towards Pacifica about 10 hours behind schedule. And this is where things like consistency in the writing gets thrown off a little bit. So they get a disturbance in another sector, and, you know, we don't really know. Worf can't explain what it is. And it's
Troy is completely useless.
Geordi confirms it and stuff. And it's one of those things where it's like, well, okay, so it's a disturbance. Was it like an energy like spike, or like what, something happened? Like, what is the disturbance? I don't think the screen just says the word disturbance on it. And it somehow circles them back relatively close to Ditalix B, because they go and they find debris, and it's a little silly that none of them at first are like, it looks like debris from a ship. It's just like, we don't know what this is. And I get they don't want to jump to the conclusion of it being the Horatio, but it looks like a ship.
They should have known that, because they were just there. They would have noticed or commented on any satellites in the vicinity in the building or anything else just floating. They would have commented on a space station or...
They didn't even think it was a ship. They just like, oh, it's just some stuff floating in space. And, you know, so they, of course, they find out that it has to be the Horatio.
That brings me to a point. This is a tangent. I've always wanted to know. I don't think like Star Wars has thought this out, but clearly Star Trek, like the Federation has a janitorial department where they go and they clean up the crap from space. All these explosions that they cause and stuff, like,
it depends.
Yeah.
So Starfleet always recovers debris from ships and other spacefaring type vessels and components.
Okay.
Because the technology is valuable, or the materials can be recycled, or they need to be analyzed to determine the cause of whatever happened if they don't know. I don't know that other organizations have that, like the Klingon Empire. I don't know. I'm sure the Romulans do, because they don't want their technology going to anybody else ever.
Right.
So I'm sure they do. The Klingons, I'm not so sure that they would care as much. The Ferengi probably do, because you can sell those materials. And the Cardassians probably do, for the same reason the Romulans do. So I would imagine the big organizations do something like
that. They have a cleanup crew.
They have frigates. They have, like, there are special starships that, like, are designed to tow, which is a weird concept for space travel, but there's some Trekno babble behind that.
I mean, Tony needed it in Endgame, so it's right, valid. Right.
So there's some stuff like that that I'm sure is out there. I think what bothered me the most about the destruction of the Horatio is that they never find any bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Horatio was an Ambassador-class ship. Now, assuming that that's not a mistake, if we assume that that's correct, the Enterprise C was an Ambassador-class ship. So it's not a tiny vessel. It's not as big as the Enterprise D, which is 1,000 or so people if you include the civilians. But it has hundreds of people. I would put it, you know, off the top of my head, probably between 500 and 800 people were on board that ship.
That's probably an oversight based on a few different things. Like, one, Star Trek hadn't stepped into the realm of horror yet.
I mean, by the end of the episode, I don't know.
But, I mean, Star Trek Discovery has no qualms about showing bodies floating in space. And, you know, TNG just wasn't there. Like, really? Really?
There's plenty of times in Star Trek where they do a scan and they find bodies that they don't show on the view screen.
Interesting.
You
know,
like, you don't need to show them for Worf to say, I've been able to identify X number of bodies or something like that, you know, because Starfleet officers wear comm badges and that can be locked in on when the life sign is too weak or not there.
Right.
You know, and things like that. So that the fact that Worf actually says straight up, I can't find any bodies, that's weird. Like, they say the sentence. They didn't even have to say anything. They just could have been like, are there any survivors? And he says no. But instead, like, they can't find bodies. And they find dead people all the time in Star Trek.
Right.
In season one, they find dead bodies. Right, of course. Right?
Like Tasha.
It's a little different. but yeah, so
just that, a joke.
It's a little weird because by the end of the episode, to find out, like, what's going on, how did they hide hundreds of bodies? Like,
unless even if I'm on the low they beamed side everybody off before the explosion, where? Except the captain. Like, I don't know. I have no idea. There's no explanation. Like, that's the problem with this episode, is that some of the writing decisions that they made were not well thought out or not well explained. Maybe there is some script writer or production person who was like, yeah, we totally filmed a scene where they said that, but it got cut. And, like, we don't know. So,
I mean, you're right. That's definitely true.
It's just a poor loophole. But those are in horror movies all the time.
Right. It's just, I mean, it's a little weird because I just feel like they have to hide a large number of people. And I don't know. It just didn't really work for me. Like, I'm looking on Memory Alpha real quick to see if there is an official crew capacity for the Ambassador class, and I'm not seeing it in here. I'm just kind of, you know, glancing, of course. So, you know, I imagine it's got to be more than the Constitution class Enterprise.
Oh, absolutely.
So that means you're north of 400 people.
Okay.
So to beam 400 people away is not really technology that the Federation has.
Right.
And so they couldn't do that. So I think it's just an oversight or bad writing in that case. Okay, the Horatio is destroyed, Keel is dead, Picard
brings in Riker and gives...
Well, he brings in Troy first.
Oh, right, yeah, he brings in Troy, but he did that before he went down.
True. Didn't he? Yeah, so Troy, until Guinan shows up on the show, Troy is really his, you know, his conscience.
Like, and I mean, Guinan was only in a handful of episodes as opposed to Troy. So he still uses her.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so then he brings in Riker and explains everything. And Riker's kind of with Picard, like, not really sure what to make of it. It's a pretty big undertaking to claim that someone has taken over, you know, Starfleet.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an easy task, right? And meanwhile, Data's got his little assignment.
Project, yeah.
Right? And there's some funny stuff in there. A lot of the same images are repeated, of course, because they're not going to be able to put together that kind of stuff. But Data banters with the computer, and the computer responds back kind of sarcastically, which is great. But then, you know, Data, like, lays out the whole thing.
Yeah.
And we hear that, you know, someone's really trying to get a foothold in certain territories of Federation space.
That over a course of, like, what, about a year or so?
6 months.
6 months?
Yeah.
Certain positions were being shuffled around, mm-hmm. and things were done so slowly and subtly that nobody really noticed that, you know, higher-ups were being replaced. And personality changes occurred, and It was on a very small, slow scale. These guys were in it for the long haul.
Yeah, they're definitely patient, that's for sure. And so, of course, you know, Riker, you know, is like, well, we can't just walk up to Earth and ask him what's going on. And, you know, to kind of everybody's surprise, Data's like, why not?
Yeah.
You know, and then this goes back to Picard. And another reason why I picked this episode to be on the list is Picard's like, yeah, that's what we're going to freaking do. You know, we're going to march right into Starfleet headquarters and figure out what's going on, which is a pretty gutsy thing to do. Yeah, they're on a galaxy class starship. Yeah, it's the flagship of the Federation, but it's one ship.
Yeah.
Where the ranking officer is a captain and is outranked by a number of people in Starfleet because there's a lot of admirals. And so it's a pretty big risk. Now he's got his bridge staff behind him, which is certainly better than nothing, but you know, they make a whole point of it that, you know, starships rarely go back to Earth. And I assume they mean like any starships that are on a long-term mission. And of course there's the word starship is a little vague. There's some, you know, slower, smaller vessels that I'm sure would be going back and forth from like Earth to Vulcan and stuff like
sure.
that. So what do you think about going straight to Earth? Do you think that was a good strategy? Would you have liked to have seen more like detective work being done?
So if this was a story done now, it would have spanned over like 3 or 4 episodes. It would have been incredibly tense and they would have played it a lot longer, a lot slower. So I think that's a whole benefit of serialized TV is that this could have gotten it was good, it was interesting, and it was not very normal Trek, so it stands out to me. And if it was done on Discovery, granted it probably would have dragged out way too long on Discovery. Right. I mean, I think like a 3-4 episode arc, this storyline would have been amazing on
like DS9.
Yeah,
or Enterprise, like later seasons.
Absolutely. So I like what TNG did with it, but it could have just been pretty amazing if it had a bit more development and spread out. So going to Earth makes sense. Kicking down the door makes sense when you have an hour's worth of TV and you want this storyline wrapped.
Right. I mean, we'll talk about this at the end, but it certainly is wrapped up. So
it wasn't a smart decision, to be completely honest. He could have gotten them all killed or taken over or something. So
it's interesting.
I think like the more story, like a couple more episodes with this, you could have explained the Horatio and what happened to all the people. Could explain why at Starfleet headquarters, there's nobody at Starfleet headquarters.
Well, I want to talk about that when we get down there. One thing to piggyback off what you're saying, though, it would have been cool if the other two captains could have shown up at some point again.
Yeah.
Like maybe after the Horatio is destroyed, Picard tries to find the other two captains so they can like team up. And then you have a small fleet arrive to Earth with, you know, 3 of Starfleet's best rather than just one lone ship.
Yeah, I agree.
Which could have been cool. But of course, she does show up again at the end and she's already taken over. So it's interesting they were able to get her, but they had to blow up the Horatio. I guess Kiel was a little more on his toes or more paranoid, maybe.
Oh, I don't think they got her after the fact. I think they got her before. She was one that blabbed about the Horatio and got Kiel killed.
You think so?
I do.
Okay. Interesting. I never thought about it that way. I always assumed that they went after all 3 captains at some point and they had to destroy the Horatio and maybe the other ship, and then they were able to compromise her.
That's, again, another thing. Not enough time. You can't explain what happened to the third one, which is a damn shame because the character looked really cool. It would have been neat to see the prosthetics in full light instead of
in that cave
overcast. And that actor, I don't remember his name, and I'm so sorry, but he appeared in one-off roles all throughout the 80s and 90s.
Oh, yeah.
I remember seeing him everywhere as a kid, and he's good. He was really believable, and he sold it, those, like, 4 minutes he had on screen.
Those 4 minutes.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's about what it was,
right?
No,
you're totally right. He's an interesting character. It's hard to really know what species he's supposed to be.
Right.
I feel like it's like an offshoot of Bolian, but I don't know if that's just because they didn't really have the Bolians down that well yet, or if he was supposed to be a different species. I'm not really sure, actually. So I guess if anyone's listening and you know, I guess let us know. You can hit us up at RedShirtsPod on Twitter and let me know, because I am very curious. All right. So they get to Earth, and they're immediately contacted by apparently the only three admirals left on Earth, which is Admiral Quinn, who we knew from Coming of Age, Admiral Savar, and then Admiral Aaron. And then Remick shows up for a brief second and all of that.
Remick is immediately, like, without me knowing about Coming of Age, Remick immediately gives off 1980s douchebag vibe. Like, he belongs in the James Spader, John Hughes film kind of thing. Like, okay. He's that character where you just know you're meant to dislike him. And he didn't give me any reason to when he's first introduced. He's incredibly polite, and he admits that he and Picard met on poor terms the first time around. Like, he's not a bad dude. But he is. He totally is. He's huge D-bag from the beginning.
It's interesting because, like, you're not supposed to like him. But I think that because of that, because you knew him from before, you know you're not supposed to like him. It's almost to trick you into thinking he's not compromised.
Yeah.
Right? He may be a jerk, but we know he's on our side. Right? And so that's kind of the big twist at the end, I think.
That's fair.
Because, like, was there ever any moment when Picard was down on Earth where you thought the other two admirals were not taken over? Or not compromised? Like, no. Was there ever a doubt?
No. From the meeting on screen, I was like, well, all those guys are completely compromised.
Right.
They're not to be trusted. But to be fair, I think that of a lot of old white men.
All right, so
minus Patrick Stewart.
Right. So let's talk about Admiral Quinn for a minute. So he comes up to the Enterprise, and everybody's buddy-buddy at first because we knew him from before, and he seemed like a good guy. And Picard immediately knows something's off.
Yeah.
So this is another good example of Picard. He's very loyal, and he trusts those that, you know, he's known for a very long time, but he's always questioning, right? He's always analyzing a situation and looking for cracks. And he picks them up on Quinn pretty quickly, which is kind of impressive.
Yeah. Well, Keel did mention that the key with these pod people or whatever is that they don't have great memory.
Right.
And Quinn is an excellent bullshitter. But it's very obvious that the remarks that Picard is making to him, like, oh, you said you were so tired lately and stressed, and it, like, he brushes it off as, you know, oh no, I'm doing much better, everything's fine. But he clearly can't remember that he said those things. And the actor plays it so well. Like, you can smell the bullshit off of him, but I don't know, he's also convincing at the same time. It's really, really good and subtle acting for a bit role.
Well, and then we have the fight with him and Riker.
Oh boy.
If that's what you want to call it.
Let's talk about the fight between two really young white people that don't look anything like the stand-in actors.
It is a really weirdly cut scene, right? Because, like, I get with Quinn you needed a body double because he is an older guy.
He is, yeah.
You know, I feel like Jonathan Frakes probably could have handled most of those stunts. I get not wanting to throw him through the glass table as one of your leads. But, like, the close-up shots, you know, like Riker kicking with the weird high kick.
That was so distracting because you're on his face and then you see a random leg out of nowhere and you know that's not how a human looks when they kick, because you've seen enough people kick things before.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
It's very distracting. It was like, I think out of all the things in this episode, the cinematography was probably the worst.
They hadn't done a lot of fight scenes yet. And I think they wanted to differentiate from TOS fight scenes.
Yeah.
With the Kirk chop and everything. And
I get it.
They hadn't really figured it out quite yet. So Riker gets beat up. Then Geordi and Worf come in, and Geordi and Worf get beat up. And then Crusher's the only one smart enough to, like, I don't know, use a phaser. the doctor of all people. But then meanwhile, of course, Picard's on the planet by himself. He's, you know, they offer him some Andorian tea, I believe. And he's very hesitant to drink it.
I would be, too. He makes sure that both of them have a sip before he does.
Yeah, I love that.
Very clever.
Because, like, he's in front of admirals here. Like, these people can... Like,
well, I mean, the non-Vulcan one, I don't know his name, but...
Aaron.
He almost doesn't do it. He's mm-hmm. also holding out and waiting for Picard. But the Vulcan just completely downs it. Maybe he, like... And Picard said, he was like, well, maybe it's not poisonous to Vulcans. I don't know. I'm still going to hold out.
Yeah. So small thing that you pointed out that has become a trope in Star Trek over the years. So I think it's funny that you pointed it out is how terrible Admiral uniforms are.
Oh, man, that thing is so bad. It's so sparkly and glittery. And they use the really crappy trim from like. A Hancock Fabrics back then, it was bad.
I never understood why admirals needed a completely different uniform.
Right.
Like, because if you notice, like, their pips are different. That's okay. I like that their pips are different.
Why wouldn't they have that? Because that's what most admirals across the world have. Like, it's same uniform, but different acknowledgments and medals and rankings. Well, it's
the only position where it happens. Because everything below admiral, it's all the same uniform until you get to cadet.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a little weird. The color, of course, changes depending on what section you're in. But
the sparkly gold and the sash that just says "I won, like Miss America."
Wait till later seasons. With like, there's this one they get that has like the largest belt buckle that's ever been made.
I'm going to keep pointing out the bad admiral costumes. Okay. I will say I also noticed that the Vulcan was wearing green eyeshadow.
Yeah, so
very similar to TOS.
This is something we talked about off the show here because I'm colorblind for those who are listening, and I don't really notice that on Vulcans. It's something that like you can really tell with Spock in anything that was shot in the not normal uniforms, like the cage and where No Man Has Gone Before, and then you can kind of notice it in the movies where he's got a lot of like eyeshadow and stuff like that.
I thought in TOS episodes it was more noticeable with Sarek than
that's fair.
It was with Spock, and of course it is something that they have not done on Discovery or the new Kelvin films, and unfortunately I haven't seen enough of Enterprise to notice whether they do it on T'Pol, but here. And this one, the Vulcan's wearing green eyeshadow.
Yeah, I never really noticed it. And of course, you know, Tuvok on Voyager is played by Tim Russ, who is a black man. And it doesn't look like he has any makeup on other than the ears, of course.
Sure.
And maybe something for the eyebrows. I'm not really sure how they did his eyebrows. But,
right.
So I never noticed, really, to be honest. And like Savick in Wrath of Khan, I don't really think she has any non-human makeup on either. So I don't know. But anyway, so going back. So
yes.
Picard finally has to go to dinner without Riker because Riker's now unconscious in sick bay. But Crusher does finally figure out what's going on. She finds the little it's like they call it a gill, but it really just looks like a spike coming out of the back of Admiral Quinn's neck.
Yeah.
They learn all about that. We learn about the creature and everything. And Picard, of course.
It is a parasitic, I guess, yeah, bug. Type an insect kind of thing. They don't really define what it's
very reminiscent of the Seti Alpha creature that Khan uses.
Yes. Seems to be a lot less painful.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we don't know.
Well, the Seti Alpha thing always reminded me of like Animorphs and Yerks and stuff.
That's kind of cool.
I was a big Animorphs
fan.
That's
nice. I like that.
And now, looking back, it's very likely that the creator of Animorphs was inspired by that.
All the best things are inspired by Star Trek. I don't know if you know that.
Like Star Wars.
anyway, so Picard now, you know, that's his only thing to go off of is that little gill. But he's got to go to dinner. And they sit down, and there's these little bowls, and they open the bowls, and it's bowls of, like,
It's straight up maggots. They're maggots.
Are they?
Yeah.
They look like millipedes or something. Not millipedes, but...
No, millipedes have legs.
Yeah, not millipedes.
Those were maggots.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah. For the giant, like, horsefly kind of things, those were maggots. Picards and Riker's bowls are the only ones that are moving. The others who are actually eating from the bowls, it's very likely that it's candy. Because they weren't ever moving.
No one's eating maggots. Well, I know.
But they didn't even try to like swap it out here and there. Like, I knew the actors weren't going to eat maggots. That's actually very disgusting. It could cause a lot of diseases. It's incredibly negligent on their part. If you're going to have stand-in actors, there's no reason why you should have real maggots to eat. So that,
or
like,
you get the stand-in actors to eat the maggots.
Oh, poor Sun people. They never get any love.
They never get enough respect.
No, so I at no point did I think that the maggots were going to be real for the people that are actually eating them. But like, they also didn't try to make it look at all like they were moving. They were completely still, and they crunched instead of that's one of the things where maybe it was a poor oversight or just beyond their technology at the time, but I'm very happy about that because I was watching dead on, like, is that bowl moving? Did he actually pick stuff up?
I think that scene's the grossest out of any Star Trek scene.
I absolutely hate bug play like that in most movies. If you want to get me and make my stomach churn, that's how you do it. And at this point, this is when the episode becomes a horror movie for me.
Now, I guess there are some times where you get to see Klingon gach, which is like live worms, essentially.
Right.
But they kind of just look like gummy worms most of the time, so it didn't really bother me.
Yeah.
There's clearly shots of like real maggot type things. Yeah. So of course Picard doesn't want to eat it. It's gross, but everybody else is eating it.
Laughing at him.
Yeah. So at that point, like, the cat's out of the bag. Everybody knows what's going on.
But they've completely surrounded him with multiple officers, and they are taunting him. You know, they figure that they'll just tell him the entire plan, which is clearly the villain's worst mistake. You never monologue your plan.
The Incredibles wasn't out yet, so they didn't have that to go off of. But I do like, so Riker comes in and he's been taken over too. And he's having Jonathan Frakes is having a really good time with this, cause he can just, you know, call him Picard, and he like just loves, he seemed to really enjoy that scene.
Yep.
which I guess was probably one of the earlier moments where Jonathan Frakes got to be a little more like casual about things. Cause the show doesn't.
Before the saxophone. Or no, it was a trombone. I'm so sorry.
The characters don't really ease in and become really comfortable until season 3.
Season 2 had so many of those shakeups. So,
well, season 2 has got a lot of its own issues that we can talk about when we have season 2 episodes. But
can't wait to diss on Pulaski, bitch.
All right. Anyway, okay. So we, of course, you know, Riker's not really taken over. The whole thing was a plan by Crusher, and they defeat the admirals, and the little creatures run away, and they run after one of them, and it goes into this really weird room that's got like Professor Xavier's chair or something like that. I don't know what that thing is that Remick is sitting in. And the thing, this is where the things start to get really weird. If they weren't weird enough for you, the thing crawls up Remick's leg and into his mouth.
Yeah.
Not great stop motion, I have to say, but
not the worst at that time. Everybody was using it for cheap gimmicks like this, and like it was in so many Nickelodeon shows. Like, come on,
but this wasn't Nickelodeon.
They had similar budgets sometimes. Like,
I'm
just saying, there was worse stop motion too.
So we find out that Remick is like the leader of this whole thing.
He's the queen. Picard flat out calls him the queen, and I love it. Like,
the mother creature.
Yes.
So they shoot him. His head blows up. His whole chest like explodes out and melts away.
And this little puppet emerges, and it's like, yeah! It makes like that noise. Yeah. And it's in. Oh God, it's totally reminiscent of Alien.
Absolutely.
The chest burster, and all, like, they pan over, you see Picard and Riker, and they look like they have zero remorse because they're just super grossed out. And then you see all these gross little creatures laying down, and they're like burnt up to a crisp and dying and stuff. It's pretty nasty.
Yeah, so like they kill like a lot of these because, you know, they mentioned later that killing the mother creature like killed all of them.
I hate that sci-fi trope.
Yeah, it's a terrible
sci-fi trope. I hate that so much.
I know, but at least they did it before Independence Day. So.
Or Avengers.
Or Avengers. So that's right. Star Trek did it first.
Or let's see, the Faculty did it.
So then like the question is like, is this it for the entire species, or is it an Independence Day thing where there are other like nests, so to speak? So that ends up being it. That's really where the episode kind of ends. And things kind of go back to normal. And the whole plot, that's it. You never really hear about it again. And there's a couple of people that think this idea morphed into what became the Founders and the Dominion, or what morphed into what Species 8472 does later on in Voyager, where they're training to become human and things like that. This idea of having imposters take over, you know, like Manchurian Candidate type things. Maybe that, you know, that's where those ideas came from, was from this episode, but this concept was the end of that story.
Right. This never comes back. This exact species never comes back or is mentioned again. And I'm okay with that to a certain degree. It seems a little short-sighted. There's an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer in season 2 where a woman disguised woman, but she's really this overgrown mantis demon, and she mates with some of the male students and lays eggs in the science department, and they never pick that up. And it's very un-Whedon like to just never pick that up again. Like, why would you show us all these eggs and never talk about it? So it seems similar to that. Like, maybe Whedon was just like, no, I'm done with bugs.
Maybe. So, all right, so let's talk about then kind of the wrapping up of the episode here. So how do you feel about the episode overall, and like as it pertains to Picard, kind of what are some takeaways?
Okay, so first of all, the episode, I absolutely love it. And it's because it feels like a B-horror film for me, like a grindhouse film. And it starts out as one thing, like a conspiracy thriller, and then it turns into this body horror movie, and I love it. It's like, and it has all the makings of a good B movie, like shoddy CGI and bad stop motion and really horrible stunts. And so maybe that's not like a great thing when you break it down, especially for an episode of TNG of all things, but it was unique. And this episode is going to stick out to me as clever and fun and just a breakaway from the normal, you know, working things out with our words and diplomacy and
diplomacy,
like, what you know, what Star Trek usually is, what Picard usually is. Now, as far as a Picard episode goes, I think it's pretty telling of who he is as a person. It's incredibly defining. It talks about, or he shows us who he is as a captain, who he is as a friend, and what he's willing to do to protect his crew.
Okay. Fair enough.
Thank you.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I think putting his back against the wall against Starfleet and the higher ups in Starfleet and having him have to trust in an old friend and that friend dies, like he goes through a lot in this episode. And, you know, if this was something that was serialized, I think the death of Keel would probably be brought up more often.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure that we ever hear his name again.
We see Crusher visibly bothered that she didn't get to see him at all when the Horatio's mentioned, and you know, it's mentioned multiple times that he introduced her and her husband. So it's very, I guess, a little unfair to character development that's never touched on. You know, she lost a friend and she doesn't get to grieve. She has to immediately go into doctor mode.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty common on Star Trek, though, where a character dies and they just, or people die and they just have to go straight into something else.
But even that should be touched on, because honestly, we all have those times where tragedy happens, but the world continues to spin. We still have to go about our day because, you know, life doesn't stop, even though we right. want it to. So even that, just a quick 5 minutes, like she and Picard maybe should have had a little wrap up at the end or a toast or something.
Yeah, that would have been nice. Yeah. Is there anything else you want to touch on for this episode? This ends season one for us.
So at this point, I guess I wasn't... I thought I knew a lot about Klingons. Do they not like bathing? Worf's comment at the beginning about swimming is too much like bathing with a snarl. And
I think the idea is like they don't get joy out of that.
That's sad.
It's on a vacation for him. And I can kind of relate to an extent. Like, I don't really want to spend my vacation at the beach. I want to go do other things. You know?
That's sad.
So
I want to.
Okay. So that is it then for Conspiracy, which closes out our season one of our top 20 quintessential Picard episodes. Next time, we'll be moving on to our only season two episode, which is The Measure of a Man. Which is a pretty classic episode. Most people who are familiar with Star Trek are familiar with that episode. So that's what we'll be covering next time, probably next week. I'm not sure exactly when Greg will be returning for us to talk about some other stuff. But
thing is, I'll fill in when Greg isn't available, and we'll continue our thing, the prepping for Picard. So maybe every week, it may be every other, it may be scattered here and there, but we'll get it done. We'll watch 20 episodes and have a good time.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So thank you for joining us. If you're enjoying prepping for Picard, you know, you can use that hashtag with the number 4. I've been using that for fun.
Or, you know, tell us what you thought of Conspiracy.
Yes, please. And watch The Measure of a Man for next time so we can talk about that one as well. You can find me at The Star Trek Dude on Twitter and Facebook. Ray, what about you?
You can find me at Siren Ray, Siren with a Y, not an E. And we can chat about all kinds of stuff.
Fantastic. All right. Fantastic. Well, thank you for joining us. We will catch you next time.
Bye, guys.
Red Shirts and Runabouts is part of the Heroes Podcast Network and is hosted by Gregory Bosco and me, Derek Mayer. The music is by Flying Killer Robots. Please follow us at Red Shirts Pod on Twitter or at Heroes Podcasts on Facebook, Instagram, or heroespodcast.com. You can subscribe to our show on Apple iTunes, Google Play, Spreaker, and pretty much any other podcast app. If you enjoy the show, please support us. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/heroespodcasts, and we also have a Ko-fi, ko-fi.com/heroespodcasts. We'll catch you next time. Live long and prosper.